What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Geno Time Podcast here on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Bet Online. My name is Tom Westerholm. I'm joined by Nicole Yang. Nicole, how you doing?
Tom, I'm going to read you off some numbers, okay?
All right, I'm ready.
109, 137, 101, 119, 122, 100, 132, 146, 116, 124. We'll stop there. You know what those numbers are.
Were these offensive ratings for the Boston Celtics?
These are the number of points scored by the Washington Wizards' last 10 opponents. Guess how many points the Celtics scored tonight or this afternoon against the Washington Wizards? 91.
Oh, man. The
first time all season an opponent hasn't cracked 100 points against the Washington Wizards, who own the league's second to last defensive rating, and who earlier this season, Bradley Beal said, "We can't guard a parked car." And the Boston Celtics lost to this team and only scored 91 points.
Close your stats tab there for a second. I'll do a couple for you here. 8. What do you think that refers to?
The number of points scored by the entire bench.
No, it's the number of turnovers the Celtics committed in the third quarter alone. We'll go 5 for 25.
Everybody not named Jaylen Brown or Kemba Walker's field goal percentage.
In the starting lineup, yes. We'll go, 24%.
Their three-point percentage.
No, the overall field goals of the Boston Celtics, if you remove Jaylen and Kemba from the numbers.
And what's wild is the Wizards shot 23.3% from three and still won by over 10 points. And at one point led by 25, I think, maybe even pushing 30 at one point. Like, this was abysmal on so many levels for the Celtics, like unacceptable, embarrassing, inexcusable. It was all of that. Like, there's no reason, especially after losing to the Detroit Pistons, you can't turn in this performance.
No, you can't. And you know what's wild is that, like, I don't even, like, there's nothing else to even really say. Like, I know fans want, you know, media to, like, do X, Y, or Z, like, you know, ask the tough questions, do whatever. I don't know. Like, they were terrible. Like, they were just a bad basketball team. And, like, there clearly aren't any solutions right now.
We can go on about the stats. Season low, yeah. 14 assists.
A 14-17 assist to turnover ratio.
Only 3 players hit more than 2 shots.
Yeah.
And one of those players was Jason Tatum, who hit 3 shots.
Russell Westbrook was 6 for 19 with 13 points, and the Celtics still managed to lose.
I'm not sure what the conclusion here is, other than something we've sort of been building towards, which is just this team as constructed isn't good enough. And I don't think it's necessarily like Jason Tatum's fault or Jaylen Brown's fault, even though Jason Tatum hasn't looked the exact same since returning from COVID, but like those two are not the problem.
No, I mean, they're not. Imagine being those two guys and knowing every single night this team needs somewhere in the range of 28 to 31 points for you to have a chance to win. And it doesn't matter who the opponent is, because clearly, like, you can't beat the Wizards if you're not getting a big game from Jason Tatum.
The sad part too is they actually got a solid game from Kemba Walker.
It really, I mean, he looked pretty good. I mean, and obviously a lot of, you know, some of that might be that the Wizards are the league's worst defense. Like, that's entirely plausible. Like, you know, Brad Stevens said a couple of days ago, look, like, you know, we're going to try some new things to get, you know, try to get Kemba Walker, you know, better looks. Maybe that worked a little bit, but like, it didn't solve the problems. Like, you know, Kemba Walker wasn't the answer tonight.
Heading into this game, he was 1 for 20 from 2-point range. So it was good to see him sort of play through contact, make some shots from within the arc.
Yeah, right. Get a couple of layups to go down.
Like, at the very least, maybe it'll be a confidence boost.
But I mean, you know, he was asked about that and he was like, you know, basically like, you know, hey, is there like anything you can, you know, extrapolate from this? Just like, not really. Like, at one point he's like, it ain't many positives, I'm going to be honest. And I was like, yeah, like that's exactly right, man. And, you know, like, it's going to be easy to like throw this entire, like, just be like, hey, like the Celtics experiment is over, trade everyone. Like, you know, that I know that's going to be like the default reaction, and like, it's not good. There's going to have to be some nuance to this, because I think everybody agrees that the Celtics have two stars, and I don't think that you can point to just one problem here. There is clearly like a lot of stuff going wrong. And actually, this is one of the reasons why it kind of sucks that there's no, you know, not to like self-aggrandize reporters, but like, we aren't in the locker room. We aren't seeing like, you know, people being frustrated. We're just not privy to any of this stuff that we might have been a little bit more connected on. And like, this is just like a weird stretch for this team.
Okay, so obviously you acknowledge that this season is different because of the coronavirus. And on top of that, the Celtics were affected by that with Tatum, Robert Williams testing positive.
The Wizards were much more affected by that. But yeah, so it is wild how all of like the little like excuses for the Celtics in this game were matched and exceeded by the Wizards. Like, oh, the Celtics just had a cold shooting night from three. The Wizards were worse. Oh, the Celtics are still trying to work their way back from the COVID stuff. The Wizards had it worse. Yeah. Well, it was a 1 p.m. start. Yeah, the Wizards also started at 1 p.m. Like...
And like, Marcus Smart is out, which obviously is huge.
But Ish Smith and Thomas Bryant were out.
Like, I know. But just like Celtics specific in regard to their problems, like that is a big deal. One, because it's Marcus Smart, but two, because of how weak the rest of their roster is, it puts everybody else in positions that they might not necessarily be ready for. But if I had to identify like the one problem, I would say it's the bench still. Yes, there have been stronger flashes maybe from Semi Ojeleye this year, but like, it's still not reliable enough, and it's not exactly what the Celtics need off the bench. So if I had to ID one problem, I would say it's the bench.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say the bench necessarily. Again, I think it's that, especially with Marcus Smart out, players 4, 5, 6, and 7 just aren't good enough. And the players that the Celtics have playing there are, you know, guys who would be a lot better served being like 6, 7, 8, 9. Like, they just don't have that middle guy. And, you know, the few games where they have had that middle guy, like, you know, we saw what it looks like when Semi Ojeleye, you know, looks like Harrison Barnes. That's when they look great. That's when they beat the Raptors. That's not fair to Semi, because Semi isn't Harrison Barnes. Where the Celtics are at right now, if Jalen or Jason doesn't go off, you look around the rest of the roster and you're just like, I don't see where else they're going to get production here. Like, most teams, there's like a couple of guys who could be good for some random, you know, 25 point nights, 30 point nights. And like Grant Williams, like, I just don't think the Celtics have that on the roster right now.
And we sort of talked about this after Tyler Hero scored 37 points in the playoffs last year. Literally, we were trying to think of which Celtics bench player could score 37 points.
Yeah.
And there was not one. And once again, I think we have that. I think it would be Fast PP. He would explode for one night.
That's exactly it, though. There's a big difference between a guy who, like, you look at and you think, oh, I could see him, like, you know, going off for 20 points tonight, and a guy who, like, might have, like, the night of his life. There's just a big difference there. And, like, Pritchard could get there for sure, like, you know, in the next couple of years. Like, he's good. He's going to be a good player.
Definitely.
A couple of years down the line, like, if Semi keeps working, like, you know, we know he's going to keep working. Like, I don't think he's going to get to that point, but like, I think he's definitely a role player, like, in the NBA, and those guys have the potential to do some stuff. He scored 24 the other night, but like,
yeah,
but I mean, on a consistent basis, yeah, it's just different. And the Celtics just don't have that guy.
There's just no source of reliable offense on the bench right now.
This is kind of, you know, an indictment on, you know, I think the way the team was built this offseason, that I think Jeff Teague was the guy who was supposed to kind of be that guy. We talked about it the other day. I feel kind of bad for Jeff Teague, but like, he's not that guy. He hasn't been that guy since like the early 2010s. Like, he's just not that guy.
So you said that you're not in trade everyone mode. I think that the Celtics should be, with the exception of Jason Tatum, obviously, and Jaylen Brown.
Right. That they're the players that I'm referring to when I say I'm not in trade everyone mode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, everybody else. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's time to make some moves.
Yeah. Okay. I definitely think that everything should be on the table. And I think that if Danny stands pat at the trade deadline, which he has in, I think, the past 2 years, right?
Yeah.
If they want any shot at contending, he has to make a move. And if they don't, I think that means they're just folding it. Like,
and you know what? I mean, I was thinking about that exact thing, and he's in such a tough position there, because there actually is like a very legitimate case to be made for kind of punting on this season, because you're probably going to have a better option with the TPE in the offseason. You know, you're going to have more time to kind of like prepare and try to like build a strategy and all of that kind of stuff. yes, you don't want to waste a year of Jalen Jason, but at the same time, I mean, Jason just starts his contract next year. You know, Jalen just started his contract this year, and Jalen seems to, you know, of those two guys, I mean, Jalen is the one who's always like, I trust this organization. I trust this coaching staff. He said it again tonight. You know, there is like a very legitimate case to be made for that, except that you can't just like pull Jalen and Jason for the rest of this year. Like you can't do that. And that's the thing that would be smart to do, not for any like tanking specific or anything like that, just because you don't want those guys to like suffer an injury or take on a bunch of miles this year in this busted ass season that is then going to carry over into next year. I don't know. I mean, you got to be really careful.
Especially in a year where Danny Ainge revealed that Jaylen Brown is playing through tendonitis.
Yeah.
Knee tendonitis. Like that isn't great. Like that's why I was kind of alarmed by Brad keeping him in the game up until 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I was like, is this really necessary at this point? Like the other thing about waiting till the off season, more teams will probably be sellers then. Like obviously Tom has made his case for Harrison Barnes, but the Kings are 10th in the West right now. And I don't know, like, I think there are teams in the West, especially with the expanded playoff field, that are going to think they're in contention and won't want to trade a player important enough that the Celtics would be interested in them.
The other thing to remember too, is that like, if the Celtics, you know, if Danny did do nothing at the deadline and just kind of pushed it off to the offseason, that would mean more minutes for all the guys that he's going to need as chips, as trade pieces too. Because like right now, I can't imagine what Aaron Nesmith's trade value is, but it's not high. Like what Romeo Langford, like none of these guys have any trade value right now. And it's not because they're bad players. It's because like they aren't ready to make this team good yet. I agree with you. I think that waiting to the offseason has a lot of benefits. And I guess the other thing I will say too, is that if there is a GM in the league with enough cachet to do that, you know, it's like Masai Ujiri, but then it's also like Danny Ainge. Like Danny Ainge isn't going anywhere. Like maybe you just look at it and say, okay, if the Celtics end up being the seventh seed, they end up being the seventh seed, and you got to rest Jalen and Jason the time that they need, and you're going to lose some games, and that's going to be what it is. We're overreacting a little bit in that we're recording this on Sunday, like 2 hours after the game wrapped up. Like we're letting the hate flow through us right now. And, you know, kind of like, and talking about it at its worst. Whereas like if the Celtics beat Denver, if they beat Atlanta twice, if they knock off New Orleans, all of a sudden, like we would be talking about the team very differently. If Jason Tatum breaks out of his little mini slump and starts and averages 40 points a game for a week, like, yeah, like the, like, I'm just saying like there are ways that this team could look really different. There's nothing normal about this season. Like right now, I believe the Miami Heat are not in the playoffs. The Heat are 11-15. They would have to play in the play-in games. The Knicks are 13-15, and they're like seventh in the Eastern Conference. Like, you know, like the number three team in the East is 16-12. Like, that's not like a number three seed. Like, there's weird stuff happening around the league. None of that is to say that the Celtics have been good or that they've been acceptable by any means. It's just, I guess when I say we're overreacting to things, I just mean that we are reacting to like a bizarre season. Like, I don't know what to make of any of this. So like, you don't want to overreact and be like, okay, it's time to do something like trade Jalen for Bradley Beal. I mean, like maybe that would help, but you don't know.
Think that would help. They need bench help more than they need to swap out a star. If they could retain Jalen and Jason and get Bradley Beal, obviously that is a good thing. But like swapping stars at this point, I don't think will make a difference.
Yeah, I guess I'm just saying that, like, I guess to kind of go back to my other point, there's a lot of things wrong with this team right now. And I don't know that, like, I don't know how easy it's going to be to like fix those things this season.
Yeah. And it definitely sounds like Marcus Smart is going to take longer than the initial timetable. And I hope, and I assume that they're not going to rush him back, but that obviously sucks in terms of the minutes distribution.
I think maybe no time better than right now is good to like talk about like the really tough questions. I guess like the first like hot take tough question that I think you have to ask is like, okay, is Brad Stevens safe as the Celtics coach?
Through the end of this season for sure. And I think through next season. I don't anticipate Brad getting fired within the next 2 years. Even if the Celtics get eliminated in the Eastern Conference semis this year and next year, I think he's safe. And then at the end of next year, they would maybe reevaluate.
That's pretty much exactly how I see it too. And I think, and honestly, I think that's the right call. Like, I don't think Brad Stevens has like lost the locker room. I don't think Jaylen Brown would just be readily volunteering, like, I trust this coaching staff after a 20-point loss if Brad Stevens had lost the locker room. Like, I don't think that's the case. And I think too, like, Brad has done enough good things. I'm sorry to everybody who hates him on Twitter, but like, Brad has done enough good things over the course of his career with the Celtics so far, that I don't think dumping him in the middle of like the weirdest NBA season literally of all time is probably the right call. Like, Brad is not the best coach in the NBA. Brad is a good coach. From what we can tell, his players seem to like and respect him. Because the thing is, if you fire Brad, you're going to have to go find another coach. And who's that guy going to be?
That's what I was going to say. If you want to fire Brad Stevens this season, give me some alternatives. Like, who do you think would be better? So I think he's at least safe through two more years. And then that's probably like the midway point to try and...
Honestly, if they have competitive Eastern Conference Finals runs, you know, the next year or two, I think he's safe even well beyond that. If next year, you know, they revamp a little bit, they build up the bench and they make an Eastern Conference Finals run and, you know, lose in seven or lose in six to somebody, like, yeah, I think Brad Stevens is staying. Like, you don't shake up something that's like very good with the potential to be better, like for like a super unknown. Like, I think Brad Stevens is safe. I think Danny Ainge is obviously safe too.
I think Danny's safer than Brad. Unless things really take a turn for the Celtics, I think Danny leaves the Celtics on his own terms.
I do too.
I cannot see them firing him. They already won a title with Danny. And since then, he's made moves. Yes, the Kyrie Irving trade did end up sort of blowing up in their faces, but the deal that they swung at that time, no questions, was a good move. And yeah, Obviously drafting Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, incredible. So
you built up a lot of immunity.
I think Danny's safe really until he wants to stop.
I would contest slightly that Kyrie was like an obvious good move. Like, we all thought so. I certainly thought so. I will note that a friend of the show, Ryan Bernardoni, Danger Cart, wrote like a whole big thing on why it was a terrible trade at the time. But regardless, your point about Danny is 100%, I think, on the money. One of the things that I've seen floating around that I think is like hot takey, but, worth at least an examination. Do you think that the Celtics got Kemba as like a rebound from Kyrie and that it was like a panic move? I think there's a difference between like, you know, rebounding and like going to get like another good player and like panicking and just kind of like offering like a max contract to the first guy who will take it.
I don't think it was a panic move. It's easy to convince people of anything like in retrospect, because at the time when they signed him, he played 82 games, 80 games, 79 games, 81 games. And maybe that was a sign like, okay, if he's playing this many games, how can his body hold up as he ages? Which I think it's coming to a head right now, given all of his knee issues. But at the time, I mean, all-star, all-NBA, like fringe all-NBA, but still all-NBA, like, in retrospect, would they do it again? Probably not. But I can see the thinking, and I wouldn't say it was a panic move. What about you?
I wouldn't say so either. I don't know if that's because I actually think that or if it's because that's what I thought at the time. I was like, you know, oh, this isn't a panic move. That's a great move. They went and got Kemba Walker. He's great. Nah, I don't know. Terry Rozier is averaging 20 points per game on 49% shooting and 45 from three. But you know, like, it's easy to convince people of things in retrospect. Like you said, like hindsight is real clear.
I do wonder whether Terry would have even wanted to have stayed. Like, things had gotten so poorly. Like, yes, Kyrie was going to be gone, so maybe that changes things for Terry. But like, remember Terry's last day in the locker room? He was like, guys, I've been through some bullshit and you guys haven't even heard the first of it. Like, he was pissed.
Was
that locker room was in such a bad place that I think it would have been difficult. Like, Al Horford bounced. Like, yeah. I think it would have been difficult to convince Terry to stay, and I don't think it would have been difficult for the Celtics to convince themselves that was the right move given how unhappy Terry was.
No question. I mean, you know, and it's not like Terry had any like playoff success that could have like tipped them off. Oh wait. No, I mean, I agree with you. It would have been difficult, and you're probably right. Like, he very well might not have wanted to stick around. And the Celtics at the time didn't know how good Jaylen and Jason were going to turn out to be. Like, they had both had down seasons too, so the whole thing was kind of a mess. What other takes have you seen kind of floating around Twitter that we could go over here?
I mean, are the Celtics bad?
They're not bad enough.
I'm surprised Tom has not yet said, even jokingly, punt on this season, try and get Kate Cunningham.
Oh, where do you think I was going with this, Nicole?
And then you're golden.
The Celtics right now are 13-13. if you lose some games this season, and you don't make the playoffs in this, the weirdest season of all time, you still have 3 more years of Jaylen. You still have 4 more years of Tatum. And I don't know, maybe you have maybe you have a Zaire Williams. Maybe you have Moses Moody. Maybe you have any number of guys. Maybe you get real lucky and you get Jonathan Kuminga. Like, you get high enough to get Jonathan Kuminga. I don't know. Maybe you get James Booknight. A lot of good players in college this year. Like, right now, the Celtics actually, like, they've fallen down to the 18th pick. If you look at, like, Tankathon, and you actually could get somebody, like, useful at 18. I know I said that all of last year, and now they're trying to, like, figure out how to use Aaron Nesmith. But I don't know. Like, they're in a tough spot because they're probably going to win enough games to not get a good draft pick. But they're not going to win enough games to be like, it doesn't seem like they're going to win enough games to be, like, you know, super competitive in the East. As hard as it is to believe, they have 2 genuine stars, and they are still, the rest of their team is still so bad that they're kind of a middle of the road team right now. That's brutal. That is just a brutal setup.
All right. So let's discuss the bench a little bit more here. So really, the bench consists of the Celtics' entire roster, except for Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, and Kemba Walker. Let's start at the bottom with the two-way guys, Taco Fall and Tremont Waters. I don't think they're going to be on the team next year.
No, I don't think so. I think there was a lot of, like, reason to be hopeful about Tremont Waters. I think we're seeing that a 5'6" guy in the NBA just is going to struggle. I know he was, you know, a monster defensively in college. This is the big boy league.
Can't keep up. Carson yep. Edwards can't keep up.
He's pretty small. I mean, he's obviously quite a bit bigger than Tremont. I think there's a role for Carson in the league, maybe. Carson, I think, has, like, a better NBA future than Tremont. That said, I could easily see Carson not being on the team next year, too.
So what did you think of Aaron Nesmith's night? Obviously, like, when you view the season as a whole, this was not what the Celtics needed. Like, he needed to be way more ready than he is. But he did play 29 minutes tonight. Didn't, like, produce much in terms of a stat line, like, still only scored 5 points. But what did you make of his performance?
I thought he played hard, but wasn't very good. Like, that's where he's been. And that's the honest answer to everyone who, like, has, like, just been like, why isn't Brad playing Nesmith? Like, I'm sorry, he's not a good player. Like, and I still think he could be down the road, but, like, that just is what it is. Like, he is not ready to go. And, like, yeah, if you got, you know, if people hear that and they're like, wait a minute, Tom, you said during the pre-draft process that Aaron Nesmith might be ready to go. My bad. Like, you know, I'm not paid to, like, build this team. Like, I'm paid to analyze draft guys. And I thought that, you know, like, a 6'6" wing with, like, long arms who can really shoot would, like, might be ready. But, like, swing and a miss on that one. He just isn't. Like, you know, again, he's playing really hard. He's more athletic than I thought he was, which I think, you know, bodes well. I think he's going to be able to shoot it. I really do. But, like, he's just not there. And I don't think it's a matter of, like, not getting enough minutes. I think it's a matter of he was drafted in November and expected to be an NBA player, like, a month later. I think that's a big, big, big part of it.
Not only was there no summer league, no training camp, no real offseason, like, he doesn't even have the benefit of going to the G League. Like, Terry Rozier's first season, he was in Maine, like, half the time. Romeo Langford got so many reps in Maine. Like, he can't even just go up to Maine on an off day and play in a game and then come back.
And not only does he not have Maine, he doesn't have any practice. The Celtics don't practice. Like, seriously, I don't know how he's getting better. Like, he's just, like, traveling along with the team. Like, he's getting better. Like, he's got the, I feel like he's got the same amount of, like, opportunities as, like, Andy Mannix. Like, he can't, like, like, what is he doing? It's tough.
There's still hope for the future. Obviously, you hope with a normal offseason and also just totally. more time to develop, like, physically too.
I think he's going to be a good player. I do still. Like, the interesting thing about him not really shooting well is we're seeing, like, the other things that he can do that, like, that should translate. Like, I think he will be a very, very serviceable 3-and-D player, you know, maybe with a little bit more, maybe a little bit of driving off closeouts and that kind of thing. Like, he's a lot more athletic than I thought he was. That's all super positive.
All right. Javonte Green.
I mean, everybody loves Javonte. I feel like him being on the team next season just really depends on, like, whether the Celtics need a 15th man or not. Like, sure. I mean, if the rest of the roster is good, like, but you can't base any of your, I just don't think you can base any of your decisions on, like, well, Javonte needs a roster spot.
All right. Jeff Teague.
Yeah. Jeff Teague has been bad. You could have seen it coming, and they didn't pay him like somebody who they expected to be good.
The expectations for Jeff Teague have sort of been skewed, like, not to make excuses for him, but, like, I feel like when he signed, the reaction was like, oh, Jeff Teague, like, is he washed? Is he not washed? Like, he's still in the league? Like, wait, what? Like, I don't really know what to expect from him. And then he had a very successful preseason and was like knocking down threes and just looked to be exactly what the Celtics needed off the bench, like a score, like everything seemed to be going well. And then obviously things have gone extremely downhill since, but I mean, maybe things were not expected to go this poorly, but his good preseason did not help the expectations, because I think everyone thought he would definitely be like a contributor off the bench. And that's just not the case.
In retrospect, when John Corrales asked Teague about like his three-point shooting, and Teague was like, oh, you jinxed me. You have to wonder if Teague was just kind of like, I'm not this good, man. man, I feel bad for Jeff Teague. I really do. Like, Jeff Teague never asked to be the savior of the Boston Celtics franchise, and everybody expected him to be on like $1.1 million or whatever he's making. Like, I don't know. It's tough. Like, he hasn't been a good addition to the team. And, you know, he felt like a scramble move at the time. But as soon as Gordon Hayward left, it felt like everything the Celtics did was a scramble move. And we'll get to another scramble move in a moment.
Tristan Thompson.
Scramble move. I am sorry. What is Tristan Thompson doing on this roster? What does he add? He doesn't add anything. And I don't think he's a bad player. I don't think, like, I understand, like, the need for veteran leadership. But, like, I'm sorry. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are perfectly capable, and Kemba Walker are all perfectly capable of veteran leadership. All those guys have been through the fire. Like, and yeah. Tristan Thompson has been through the fire and won a championship. I honestly think that part of the problem with the bench is that they're trying to find all these minutes for bigs. And, like, that's just a losing proposition in 2021 NBA. Like, I feel like, you know, obviously, you know, if a guy gets injured, you want to have, like, enough stuff there. But, like, Daniel Tyson, Rob Williams should be the two bigs. Like, Tristan Thompson's mid-level exception money should have gone to somebody who can score.
I think that's probably the criticism we haven't heard of Danny Ainge.
Yeah.
That move.
It's brutal. Because, like, the other thing it did is it hard-capped the Celtics. So, like, they hard-capped themselves going to get a guy who, like, is completely redundant and doesn't fix the one big issue that they have in the Eastern Conference, which is the Joel Embiid is an MVP now problem. That's a big problem, and it's looming.
Exactly. And I think you wonder how they could have, I don't even know who would have been available at that point, but you wonder who they could have used their money on.
You could have gotten somebody for roughly like $9.5 million. You had $9.5 million that you just tied up on Tristan Thompson for two seasons and you can't go over the cap.
And it's like, it presents two problems. The biggest one being they still have no one to guard Joel Embiid or really bigs. Like, yeah. Yes, the 20, like, I see your point and like big shouldn't be the priority in the 2021 NBA. But like, if you have a good big like Jokic or Embiid or AD, even though he wants to be a four, like
yeah.
If you have a good big, it presents a lot of problems. Like, you're not going to be able to go one for one with Embiid. That's the first problem, is just like defending and containing other fives. And then the second problem, which I think you've been pretty early on this take, is it's hindering Robert Williams's development, who is way more important to this franchise and the future of this team.
I mean, Rob Williams has starting NBA center potential, and every game he does a few things, and more he's tying them together. He's getting pretty good.
And that's the thing with Rob too, is that so much of his development is contingent upon him getting reps.
100%. Did you see the play that I clipped and posted on Twitter today?
The behind the back?
What a move. Like, okay, Rob.
Like, so much of Rob's early struggles were his defensive decisions and some of his offensive decisions, but a lot of it was decision-making.
He made bad decisions.
Exactly, though. It's decision-making. It's not necessarily, like, skills that he needs to get in the gym for. Like, obviously, he needs to stay in shape and stuff, but, like, so much of it is just decisions, and the only way he's going to become better at that is getting reps.
Thompson gets in the way of that. And honestly, like, Thompson ties Brad Stevens' hands. It just makes it harder. He's got to try to, like, explain to all of us who keep asking him, hey man, that double big lineup sucks. And he's got to, like, come up with, like, he can't just come out and say, look man, Danny Ainge went out and got a $9.5 million big man, and I have to try to find him minutes somewhere. Like, he can't do that. And I don't know if that's what he thinks. I don't want to like put words in his mouth, but like it's what I think. What I think is that Danny Ainge kind of handcuffed Brad Stevens to Tristan Thompson. And I feel a little bad saying that about Tristan Thompson, because I don't think he's a bad player. Like, he's shown some real, I mean, that guy can really rebound. He's really good at carving out space around the rim. Those are useful skills, but they are just not what you pay $9.5 million as a contender for when you already have two bigs on the roster.
It gets dark pretty quickly after their top four players. And you could argue that the fourth one could potentially also be included in the darkness.
If Kemba struggles, like,
I think there's a lot of reason to like not write off Kemba after like 11, you know, 12 games now. Like, I know that's like an excuse. Like, that sounds like an excuse that like some homer Boston writer would make about the Celtics. But I do think that there's like a lot of reason to like to hit the brakes on that one. Like, he is still coming back. Like, there's been flashes here and there. Obviously, tonight was one of them. I mean, if he's bad, then the Celtics are really handcuffed. Then things get tough. They really, really need the Kemba Walker thing to work.
And I will say, the Celtics, I feel like in recent years, tend to play up.
Yeah.
And this was definitely an issue during 2018-19. They played up and then they played down. This loss had sort of shades of the 2018-19 season.
And it's funny because you say that as kind of like, and I will say, just in the Celtics defense, and your Celtics defense is, and I will say that this does remind me a little bit of the 2018-19 season. Like, the season that literally changed everything. I can't speak to this with any like numbers or anything like that. It just, this does have a feel of the 2018-19 season right now. You can start to see guys getting a little bit frustrated, you know, a little bit frustrated that they think that they should be better as a team and they're not. And there isn't an easy explanation for it. That, I think that was a big part of the problem in 2018-19, is that like, there wasn't an easy explanation. So everybody assumes that their explanation was the right one. That's a really complicating thing. That's really hard.
And they were good enough where you couldn't write
them. Yep, exactly.
You couldn't write them off until the playoffs came, and then they got rightfully destroyed by the Milwaukee Bucks.
There were calls to make big, expansive trades at the deadline in 2018-19. And Danny obviously didn't. He opted to go for it into the playoffs, like, see what happened. And I understood his rationale at the time. I'm curious like what he might do this time around, because he's seen what happens if you – you know, if you let the locker room get real poisonous, and you just can't afford this locker room to get poisonous. This is the locker room that's supposed to carry you for the next decade.
And I don't think it's close to getting poisonous, but it easily could if the losing continues.
Exactly.
Like, players on any team say, winning solves everything. They need to start winning, and that's entirely possible. They do play the Nuggets on Tuesday, which is going to be a very tough matchup because of Jokic. That being said, I do think the Celtics play up. Like, I think that'll be a competitive game. Like, I think they'll play a lot better than they played against the Wizards. They have enough tough opponents in their final 10 games before the next schedule comes out, where, like, if they get wins over the Pacers, the Clippers, they played Trae Young and the Hawks 3 times over that 10-game span. So there's potential to get some good wins and, like, really turn the spirits around.
Yeah. They need to go above 500. It would really help if they went a little bit better than that, because it's a tough stretch in terms of games, but there are a lot of winnable games packed in there.
They play the Wizards again.
Yeah, chalk that one up as a loss. But
over the next 10 games, what do you think the Celtics record will be?
This is going to be a tough stretch. I mean, I think they're going to pull it together a little bit. You know, not to go like, you know, like we were just talking about, not to go full green teamer. I think this team is a little too good to keep losing like this. I don't think they're going to win like 8 of their next 10 or anything like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if, like, for instance, they beat Denver, you know, went 2 of 3 against Atlanta, you know, maybe you lose to Dallas and then you win on the second night of the back-to-back to kind of be like, oh wow, they gritted through the second night of the back-to-back. Like, I think they'll probably go like win 6 of their next 10 or something like that. Something underwhelming and like just good enough to make Danny be like, man, I don't know what to do here. So
that was going to be my prediction too. 6-4, and we're going to have the same conversation at the end of the 10 games.
And, you know, maybe to put a punctuation mark on it, like, maybe that's who they are. They're not good enough. This team as constructed is not good enough to be like a, you know, to be like a, they're not bad enough to be a blow it up team, and they're not good enough to be a, you know, like, oh my goodness, like, this team is like a contender. This team is going all in. Like, they're just not either of those teams. Danny's in a tough spot. Like, I know we keep saying it.
We'll see if we get any more clarity.
No question.
I doubt it.
That might be the most depressing thing about the Celtics right now. Is just like, yeah, I don't think we're going to have any answers after the next 10 games. So, all right, guys. Well, we will leave it there. As always, thank you guys for listening. We appreciate it. And we will talk to you all again later this week.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.